Hey everyone, an emotional and nostalgic Spurs general manager R.C. Buford on Tim Duncan. Stay with us.
Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with Woj, taking you inside the game. Powered by digital media, find your voice. And now, your host, Adrian Wojnarowski.
Hey everyone, welcome to another bonus edition of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. Here again this week on the campus of UNLV at the site of the NBA Summer League. Here with R.C. Buford, general manager of the San Antonio Spurs and one of the architects of this two-decade-long Spurs dynasty, two-time NBA Executive of the Year, won the award again this year after a 67-win regular season. But like everybody else in San Antonio who's been a part of that program and that organization, they credit one person, really one man, with being the truest architect of this run, which finally came to an end officially this week. And obviously that's Tim Duncan. RC, thanks for taking time to jump in. The last 72 hours, RC, what's that been like for you and for the organization, processing Tim Duncan's decision to retire?
I think it's been obviously bittersweet. It's given us an opportunity to reflect on almost two decades of success and camaraderie and relationships that we could never have dreamed of when we first came together. And at the same time, to recognize that he's not going to be the rock that he has been. And there's a responsibility level for all of us, all over the organization, all over the team, to jointly try to fill those shoes.
RC, the relationship you had over such a long time, do you feel like when you look back, you all grew up together? You all grew up together in the league as an organization, that he was a kid when he came in, but together there was...
He was a 20-year-old. He graduated from college when he was 20. So he, while a four-year college student, he came to the league young. And we grew up together, but he was the only one that deserved to be in the league. The rest of us, you know, had no business. And we, you know, we were the beneficiaries of our time with him.
How do you say thank you to someone? Is it especially difficult when he doesn't want it? He doesn't necessarily want thank you. He doesn't want circumstance, material goodbyes. Does it challenge you more as you've thought about this, these final weeks and months and days here with him?
Well, thank you will never be enough. It's impossible to thank him for what he brought to our organization, what he brought to each of us individually, how much he meant to the careers and of so many people who were together with him, players, coaches, staff, and to the organization. So it's impossible to even attempt to say thank you. I think that the biggest thing that we could have done was to try to live up to the expectations and to the bar that he set for himself. And as we supported his journey, to have done everything we could have to, as an organization, as people, live up to the standards that he's held himself accountable to.
The word culture, it gets thrown around a lot, and certainly it's become synonymous with your organization and the winning and how you've gone about your business. In the end, or maybe in the beginning, was Tim the culture?
I think the culture had roots from a long time before we were there. You know, I think the Spurs were a proud ABA franchise and had culture characteristics from their time together, from George Gervin and James Silas. So I don't know that the Spurs culture is only what it is today, but I think the success and the commitment from the fans has been with the Spurs a long time. And the way David accepted Tim into our organization at a time where David was a year or two removed from the MVP of the league, set a tone, you know, of welcome, acceptance, of shared responsibility. And we were all a part of that. So while Tim has been the culture driver for the last 19 years plus, and our hope is that he continues to be a culture driver as we go forward, it'll be in a different capacity, but there's valuable lessons to be learned from Tim as we go forward. Our hope is that the culture drivers that we have in the future will take ownership, respect what was before them, and try to resemble it in a fashion that, that makes it work for the new culture drivers.
Every day Tim came to work, whether it was practice, off season, on a game day, what did he demand of those around him?
He demanded of himself in a way that challenged all of us to demand more of ourselves. He had a look that you knew when he expected more, but it was a look that was based on only what he expected of himself and accepted from himself. And there was very seldom a time where he wasn't leading the purpose of the group. And not very seldom. There was never a time that he wasn't leading the purpose of the group. And he did it in such a way that empowered the rest of the group to join in and take shared responsibility. I hear stories of organizational problems with people being late. Tim, we didn't have some ridiculous attention to time. It's just the respect level amongst the group was such that people weren't late. They came to work. They did their work. They enjoyed their time together. I think the other culture drivers, Pop and Manu and Tony, and, you know, they've shared this with many people. The group in the early 2000s was different than the group in the later 2000s, was different than the group in 2010, and now is different than this group. So it wasn't just a small group of people that shared those values and it built that responsibility camaraderie, but he was clearly the foundation of it.
The pressure or the responsibility that you and Pop and your whole staff would feel is, as Tim went on in his career and you had different players around him, different complementary pieces at different stages of different championship teams, what was that like as you guys would sit and talk about? I think you felt, you know, especially as he got older and maybe needed more help than he did in his years when he was MVP, what were those conversations like, that responsibility that you all felt to, that as long as he was here playing, that you owed it to him, that he had a chance, that you're going to honor his talent, honor what he had done, what he could still do, and figure out a way that we still win with Tim Duncan here?
But that acts like that was some kind of a burden. It really wasn't. It was empowering to think that you have somebody who wanted to engage in the process with you, who wanted to be a part of, a participant in how this team was built and the decisions that were made, while oftentimes not popular. I mean, there was a period of time where every one of Tim's close friends on the team would get shipped out of town and it was difficult for him.
Malik Rose,
Monty Williams, Corey Alexander, Antonio Daniels. I mean, there was like a period where the kiss of death was to become Tim's close friend. Yet he wanted that responsibility, and he took it from not a selfish perspective, but the perspective that then allowed every decision to be made is what's in the best interest of the team. And the way our teams were built might have been different at the time. What we needed at a point in time when Tim, Tony, and Manu were young and could carry the team, for lack of a better term, athletically, was different than what we needed from a team as they continued on through their career. And so the pieces that worked, the Danny Ferries, the Steve Kerrs, the Terry Porters, that then turned into Bowen and Finley and Ori and Brent Berry, were different then than the later team, where you really had to emphasize the development of George Hills and Kawhi Leonard's and Corey Joseph's and Danny Green's. So what you needed as an organization to be successful changed throughout the time that Tim and then Tim, Tony, and Manu were together. The type of people didn't change.
Right. How often or how many times or how common was it that you would go to battle over, just disagree, whether he thought we can't let this guy go or he might have disagreed or someone you were going to bring in saying, I don't think that's a good fit. How often did that happen? And then how would you guys talk that out?
Most of the time that conversation happened between Tim, Tony, Manu, and Pop. Oftentimes it would be expanded to include me, but more often than not, those guys, you know, got together after we had done a lot of the homework there. And they all took it as a shared responsibility.
Can you remember times where there was maybe a move, either a trade or a free agent signing or a player you're going to bring in that group convinced you this isn't a good idea and you walked away from it?
I wouldn't say specifics, but I would say if you probably over the course of time, either through players or player signings or trades, I bet you execute less than 10% of deals that or right. opportunities that actually are discussed.
Right.
And I would say that their input is a factor on as many of the deals we didn't pursue as the deals we did.
How did Tim over time influence you as an evaluator of talent? Of what you, when you go out and you scout and you identify what a Spur's going to be, is he always in the back of your mind? Does he influence? There's no one like him, but did he make you look at things differently?
Well, I think it started with the people, not the evaluator of talent. I think the way we evaluated people and the people who could handle the responsibility of playing alongside a player like Tim and a person like Tim, not a player like Tim. Tim could play with anybody. There was not a player that played in the league while Tim was here that they wouldn't have been better because they were playing next to Tim. But there weren't as many people who could have handled the responsibility of playing with Tim. And I think it's empowered us to have a better definition of what works here.
When you think of him, RC, I was in your facility earlier, a preseason, and it was a day, it was before training camp, and I think it's an image that you all are very familiar with every day of him on the shooting machine, on the gun, with his earphones on, shot after shot after shot. When you think of him or your lasting image, is it as much in there, maybe even more so in there sometimes than all the big moments, the big games, the championships? Is it that side? I know you have to sort of come from your office and walk through the gym and you'd see him there. Is that as strong of an image as the games, the moments?
Yeah, because I think that's really where he was at. He was at his most peace. Now, oftentimes he was tormented because he was such a perfectionist and he took responsibility for his own play at such a high level that when he wasn't living up to the standards that he set for himself, I think it really churned inside. But he just loves being in the gym, and he was in there last week just doing the same thing. At a point in time, he probably already knew what his decision would be, and it will not surprise me at all that he continues to spend time by himself in the gym.
Somebody on your staff once told me, I mean, it probably may not be a big thing to people outside an organization, but the actual shooting machine, he always folds it up himself and puts it in. He doesn't leave it for an intern or a staff guy, right? Folds it up and puts it back in the closet.
He won't let other people do his work. I think it emphasizes his humility, but it also is a great example for new people in the gym to see.
The problems that pop up in a locker room, in every NBA locker room, at any level, jealousy, frustration, I should be playing more, I should maybe get more, whatever it is. Did he often handle those so you didn't have to, or Pop or the coaching staff didn't have to? Did he manage the locker room in a way from day, you know, for most of his career that almost freed Pop from having to deal with some of those things?
I don't know that Pop would ever abdicate that responsibility wholly to any one player or individual. They handled issues together. They handled their own, you know, Bud used to say Pop and Tim get divorced once a year, you know, and there'd be, you know, a week where the two of them would be cranky. But
how many of those did you have to get in the middle of over 19 years?
They always figured them out. What I could bring to that relationship would pale to what those two could bring to each other. And it's in both of their nature to not want other people to handle their business. So, but I would say that more often than not, it wasn't the house on fire relationships that Tim dealt with, but the times when guys were at their personal lows, when Tim's arm around their shoulders lifted them up at times where they, when they weren't feeling well.
The winning you did, RC, with him and the group that you had and how you guys shared it together. Listen, you never know how long it's going to go. And no one ever imagines anybody playing till 40 years old. I always sense there that there was always an appreciation that what we have is special and that what we have, that we don't take it for granted because we know nothing lasts forever. But there had to be a point, I would think, this week or you and Pop said, boy, what a run. I mean, what a run and how long we got to ride it with him.
I mean, I think those times happened over the course of the entire time we were together. It wasn't just now that this happened. As we've looked back on the course of time, there were people who said the Spurs have to break things up starting back in 2009, 10, 11 when we lost in the first round to Memphis for sure. Yeah.
I believe I was one of the people who wrote that.
You know, yeah. And it was always one of those things, okay, if not this, then what?
Right.
And none of us ever went into a room with any of the core group and felt like there is anybody outside of our group that's going to come in here and change the way we care about doing things together and the way we care about pursuing the day-to-day pounding of the rock. And so there never came to a time where, okay, we got to break this up because it wasn't going to get better than what we had inside that room. Maybe that inside that room wasn't good enough and we were going to continue to do what each of us could do to try to make, to change that, but not to change the people in that room.
People who've worked there, played there, when Tim would walk in the building, whatever time of the day or time of the year, something changed in your facility, didn't it? When he walked in, came through the doors.
Yeah, well, more often than not, he was the first one back from any season. And it wasn't to waste time. He was there with a purpose. And the years that we didn't reach our goals, he would be there sooner. He wasn't doing that because of anything more than he felt like he let the rest of us down. And, you know, as he went through his career and as the knees didn't feel as good or, you know, plantar fasciitis 1 year, the season ended. More often than not, the only reason he didn't play his best at the end of the year wasn't because he was playing poorly. It was because his body was letting him down. And to see him persevere through that, a year ago, he was still all NBA.
Yeah.
When he felt good. This year, the good knee, you know, got tweaked in December and it just never, we never could get it calmed down. And I think it was at that point in time where the body finally limited him to a point that he couldn't play to what he wanted to do.
Was that hard?
I think he fully expected to continue to play had the good knee not blown up.
Was that hard to watch this year?
It was difficult to see him struggle. It wasn't hard to watch because the things that he did that aren't oftentimes obvious were still the beautiful parts of the game. Mm-hmm. The way he mentored the younger players on our team and helped step back for LaMarcus and Kawhi to take more responsibility about the direction of our team, to mentor Boban from a kid who 3 years ago was almost out of basketball to now being, you know, a very effective player and one who was rewarded with a great opportunity. He was different to watch, but it wasn't hard to watch because he was so good at impacting people in so many different ways.
You know, so many coaches or front office executives say the hardest thing to coach or to manage is the aging superstar. And that way he made it easy for you guys. Like, is he welcomed Kawhi, he welcomed LaMarcus Aldridge. He knew he needed them to win championships. Did he bridge that seamlessly and just make that? Because it isn't easy everywhere when that happens. We've seen it last few years, and we'll probably see it forever in the league.
But he's done this not now. He did this a decade ago when it was clear that Manu and Tony were ready to take more responsibility. And at a point in time where he was late 20s, early 30s, he sacrificed what probably kept him from being just a two-time MVP for the best of the team to allow those guys to grow and take more responsibility. And the thing that oftentimes separates him from many players is as I listen to people say, my teammates or this is my team or my supporting cast, I never heard Tim refer to anybody on his team as his supporting cast. He lifted everybody else up to his level where it was our team. And he passed that on from the second he walked in the gym, and the respect that he showed to David as David went through his twilight years of his career.
David gave him a blueprint for how to grow older in the league, didn't he?
Yeah. And I don't know if it was a blueprint. They had different personalities, but they played so well together. They had such an impact together. And I think while David wasn't doing it purposefully, Tim is really, really smart, and he watches and learns a lot in observation. So I know that there were lessons to be learned from David that Tim didn't miss.
When you guys went through as an organization Tim's free agency, I think the only real free agent process he had with Orlando, the way in which that challenges an organization too, you've got to take stock in yourself of who we are and what we have to offer. I think I would imagine it really crystallizes as you're making your case to him. He knew what he had there, but all of a sudden you're competing with something that's a hypothetical out there. Orlando was offering something different. What do you remember about that time, and what did it do for you as an organization about who you were and what you wanted to be? Does it have a galvanizing effect when you go through a process like that with someone like Tim?
Well, we probably couldn't have screwed it up worse than we did. You know, I think we spent years preparing for that time. We were approaching the end of an era. Avery Johnson was at an age where he was older. Sean Elliott, Mario Elie, the guys who were with Tim in that first championship were coming to an end of their career. And Orlando at the time had draft picks and Disneyland and a very bright picture. And I think we focused more on trying to convince him that Orlando wasn't a place for him than we focused on who we were. And the meeting that we shared with Tim was a disaster. I mean, I walked out of it and we blew it. What saved us was Pop and Tim's relationship and their trust. Orlando did a terrific job of painting a picture that was very attractive. And, you know, and they had enough cap room at the time to bring two great players together. We didn't have that at the time. And at the end of the day, I think there was a late night. David flew back from Hawaii, had dinner with Tim at his house, and that, I think the two of them were real with each other. And then Tim stopped by Pop's home after leaving David's house, and the two of them rolled around on the floor and wrestled and cried and laughed. And I think that was when things we were real. We were who we are. We can't tell you what it's going to look like, but we hope you'll trust us. And the purity of their relationship, the respect that Tim had for David and that David had for Tim, I think became clear at the time. And what it also did was, I think it, the confidence that came with that was, at that point, it became clear, don't ever go into these circumstances trying to be something who you aren't. Know who you are, know what works, and that is what will be the key to the success or the failure of opportunities that come in the future. If you try to do something that you aren't, or if you try to be someone who you aren't, it won't work, at least not in our environment.
Did you walk out of that meeting with sort of pit in your stomach saying, oh shit, I think we just blew this? Was it that bad?
It was a big pit. Yeah. And what was interesting is we left that meeting and flew to a similar meeting in front of another free agent. And we went in there and we were who we were and walked out of that meeting knowing that while the structure of the deal we were proposing probably wasn't going to work, we had just made a connection that was real. And fortunately, Tim, you know, gave us a chance to trust us. And I think it was the sincerity of his relationship with Pop that, you know, that saved us.
Were you a better organization after that for having gone through it and seen sort of that, getting a reminder like that in a moment where all of a sudden you could see how much you could lose if you weren't yourself? Were you guys better going forward?
I think it provided clarity. I don't know whether we were better or worse, but I think it provided clarity of if we're going to be successful, we have to be who we are. And that was never a trait that if we'd have left it to Pop, he'd have probably carried that off by himself. But I think, you know, you spend so much time overthinking things that it took us in a direction that ended up probably we were fortunate to recover from.
R.C., there's process and paperwork that has to go with retirement, like Tim's stretching his contract. He had to file a waiver claim with the league. What was that like, writing his name into that document, sending it out?
You know, it was one of those you just hated to press the send button. And I got a clever response from a gal who we've worked with at the league office who these get submitted to. And she emailed back, says, can I deny this? Yeah, that's the reality of the paperwork. But, you know, it's the formality. The harder part was coming to the realization that, you know, Timmy's not walking through the doors to save us anymore, and now we're on our own.
Were you sort of a party to a little bit of a similar circumstance when you, I think you did the Steve Kerr trade way back?
1999, coming out of the lockout, we signed and traded for Steve Kerr with the Bulls. And as part of that transaction, on the phone, the Chicago Bulls had to renounce Michael Jordan to make the finances of the deal work. So I felt like the Grim Reaper to have been there when Michael was renounced and then to be waving Tim.
R.C., you've been here. We're at Summer League in Vegas, and you've got work to do here. You got your team here, and you're working on building your team. Has it been a little different being Pop has been back in San Antonio and Tim was there? You guys have met and talked plenty leading into this. Has it been a little different for you to be, you know, I don't say watching it from a distance, but to, you know, be 1,000 miles away from it as this was kind of playing out over the last 3 days?
Well, I know the emotion that everyone's feeling. Yeah. And it's not just Pop and Tim. It's everybody in our organization, the fans. I think the league itself, I think Tim has had such an impact across the league. And so to see to be in Las Vegas, to be here at the Summer League, to have so many teams represented, to have so many players here, either as participants or as observers, and to see the respect that they share for and admiration that they share for not only Tim as a player, but Tim as a person. It's meaningful to see that. You know, you wish that or you hope that Tim recognizes all of these feelings. A million Twitter the day that he tweets that, mm-hmm. of support the day that he announced this. I don't know that he'll pay attention to it, but you hope that he shares in the appreciation and the joy that he's given to so many people.
And the thing too, RC, right, is he's, and I think you get a better sense, you travel around the world and you know what Tim has meant. Spurs have been truly a global team. And to see, listen, there's lots of great players who've come and gone and they go in the Hall of Fame and they make an impact. Tim represented something. He represented a way of carrying yourself, a way of playing that meant something to a lot of people. Right? I mean, I would think that over time, the Spurs were a part of that, that he, and you're seeing it now, he represented something bigger. Be like him. Carry yourself like him. Other guys have won championships. Other guys have won MVPs. But there's something more he leaves with.
Yeah, but the thing that made him unique was that wasn't why he was doing that. I think there's oftentimes people will hold themselves to a certain standard because that's what they feel like they were expected to do. Tim was who he was because that's who he was. And, you know, he was being the son of his mom and dad and the values that he learned and from his parents in St. Croix. I mean, the stories we heard of the relationship that he had with his mother before she passed at a young, you know, he was 14 years old when his father passed and, you know, the message that his dad gave to Pop about, you know, make sure he leaves this game the same person that he is today. And they can feel good because he is.
RC, I appreciate you taking this time out.
Sorry.
No, hey, it's a special player, a special place in this game. And, you know, certainly you guys played a huge part in that. I appreciate you taking the time, RC. You got a summer league playoff game coming up. It just keeps going. It's just on to the next.
Yeah.
Just keeps going.
But it will never be on to the next after Tim.
Thanks, Ars. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. A big thank you to our guest today, San Antonio Spurs General Manager RC Buford. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of the Vertical Podcast. Wherever you listen, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and now on Google Play. And be sure to subscribe to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix and the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. We'll catch you next time.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.